I know you're expecting the usual intro, but we got big news.
That's right. The Adventure Zone, Here There Be Gerblins, is just now released in your bookstores and Amazon everywhere.
That's right. It's a book. It's not just a podcast.
That's right. If you didn't know, the Adventure Zone podcast, which has Clint Griffin and Justin McElroy, is actually... Oh, and Travis. How did I forget Travis?
No one could forget the Middlest Brother.
The Middlest Brother.
So go get your copy or order your copy, find your copy, steal your copy, whatever you have to do. Get your copy of The Adventure Zone. There Be Gerblins.
Here There Be Gerblins.
Here There Be Gerblins. There Be Gerblins. Everywhere There Be Gerblins. Just don't pour it, let them eat after midnight or get wet or something.
I'll tell you what, if you like The Adventure Zone podcast, you're going to love the book. I've had a chance to flip through it, and it is amazing.
Okay there, Justin, we plugged it. I want my $20.
Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, this is the first episode of season 3.
Episode 1, season 3. Bigger, bolder, and like John Bobbitt, uncut.
Unlike John Bobbitt? Or did you say like?
Well, he's not cut anymore. He was, but he's not now. Oh, now he's uncut.
He was certainly cut. But enough about that.
The first cut is the deepest.
Oh. Enough about that tender subject.
Yes. Makes me think of Al Roker's new video effort.
What's that?
Cold Cuts.
I haven't seen that.
It's a video thing that he's putting out, and he has different celebrities on there that he interviews while they make sandwiches.
That sounds kind of like a bit of a ripoff from Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
It is a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
He had Cheech and Chong on there. He was talking. You know Tommy Chong is 80 years old?
Is he really?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Dude looks good for 80 years old.
Yeah. Well, I think I did know somewhere he was a little bit older, because back in those Cheech and Chong films, I think he was kind of getting a little bit long in the tooth.
Yeah. Yeah, he's looked that way for a long time, though. At one point, he got all buffed up. He got into weightlifting and everything back several years back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, after their heyday, kind of. He was kind of spent a period where he was kind of away.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's back again.
He was just basically...
He was letting his daughter have the limelight.
Oh, okay.
Remember his daughter as an actress?
I don't.
Ray Dawn Chong?
Nope.
You don't remember that?
What was she in?
Well, let's see. The first movie she was in was something like... Origin of Fire or something like that. It was a caveman movie. And they all, I mean, nobody even talked. It was all just cavemen.
That sounds stuff. Sounds pretty artsy.
Yeah, it was. It was real. It is time. It was very well received. I have to look that one up. I don't remember. It had something, the word fire was in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Discovering fire, making fire, finding fire, something like that.
I don't know if I've ever seen a caveman movie.
Well, there's been a couple of them. There was one with Ringo Starr and Raquel Welch.
Oh, yeah.
It's called something like 90 BC or something, or 900 BC or something like that.
I did know Ringo Starr played a caveman.
Yeah. There was that one, and there was one more recent than that, I think. But we digress. That's not what we're here to talk about. We just got sidetracked as usual. 30 minutes of drivel.
Talking about caveman movies. Well, the first episode... of season 3, we thought we'd do something a little bit timely and something in the news.
Timely and topical.
Timely and topical.
Just like the ointment you use.
For the rash that we don't want to talk about. And this episode is going to be about treason. So you hear that a lot in the news here lately. A lot of people are throwing that around about President Trump, about his collusion with Russia, or alleged collusion with Russia.
His treasonous statements.
Treasonous statements. So it kind of
we shall hang him at dawn.
It kind of got me thinking, when's the last time you heard about someone getting convicted of treason? And if so, what is the sentence? And what is treason?
What is treason exactly?
Tis the season for treason.
Well, is that what, election time?
I don't know. So the history of treason started out basically in England. There's been treason in England for a long time. So they invented treason. We're just going to gloss over that and get straight to the U.S. back in the 1790s, when our government was first formed, the political parties used to kind of hate each other, and they were very...
Nothing's changed.
That's what I was going to say.
All these years, they changed their names to protect the innocent. None of them are innocent.
They were constantly saying that if you didn't support the other side when they were in power, that you were being treasonous.
Yeah, so, that's the easy thing to say.
Yeah, so seems like we've come full circle.
It's like they said, one of the things that I read in there said, well, I'll tell you how you find treason. It's when there's a civil war, whichever side wins, the losers are guilty of treason.
Yeah. Yeah, and when we go through about the people who were convicted of treason in the past, you're going to see there's quite a few from that era.
Right. So,
Alexander Hamilton and George Washington, there's a kind of a quote from this book. It said, they regarded much of the criticism fired at their administration as disloyal, even treasonous in nature. So that was kind of they were very passionate about their politics. And then whenever there was a war that broke out in France in 1797 and 1798, Hamilton increasingly mistook dissent for treason, engaged in hyperbole.
Treason and engaged in hyperbole?
Yeah, and pretty much basically the other parties agreed the same way, going the other way. And so basically it said, this article about treason said, after 1801, though, there was a peaceful transition in the political power, and basically the whole treason rhetoric kind of died down. So, but like I said, we've come full circle because now we're doing it again.
Well, that was like, I think at the time, there was England and France were fighting with each other.
Yeah.
And one party backed England and the other party backed France. And that's what they were, each one was calling the other one a traitor for backing the wrong party.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's why I think when they went to actually writing the Constitution, that they put firm language in there to define what treason was.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it got bantied around a lot.
It did. And to avoid those English law discretions, they defined it in the U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 3, which reads as follows. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. The Congress shall have the power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attained.
That's a pretty strange way of wording it.
It is. And so I had to look up what attainder and corruption of blood actually meant. It's kind of an interesting definition. So under English common law, attainder or corruption of blood basically meant when someone was condemned for a serious capital crime or offense, and they actually would lose their life, property, their hereditary titles, and also the right to pass them on to heirs. And so essentially what it would be doing is like stripping them of
everything. Of ever existing.
Yes, kind of, yeah. Stripping them of everything good.
Yeah. Well, that's what I found it in. It said the descendants of someone convicted for treason could not, as they were under English law, be considered tainted by the treason of their ancestor. Furthermore, Congress may confiscate the property of traitors, but that property must be inheritable at the death of the person convicted. So that tells me they can take the property, but once that person dies in prison or is killed for his treason, then the rightful heirs get the property back.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, all right, we convicted this guy of treason. We're going to take his property and kill him. Oh, we already killed him. Oh, well, I guess we can't take his property now. Because it's already passed on.
It's already passed on. That's right. So that was one of the big differences.
Yeah, you have to take his property before before you killed him. The Constitution doesn't talk about what the offense is. It only restricts the definition, because that was one of the things that the Founding Fathers wanted to do, was really kind of rein in the whole treasonous hyperbole, despite the fact that some of our other Founding Fathers wanted to throw it out there.
Well, I think that they were smart enough to figure out they didn't want to be constantly tied up in court with people accusing each other of treason and them having to decide, well, is this treason? Because somewhere in there, it tramples on the First Amendment.
Yeah.
Your right to say whatever you want to say, you know, without inciting to riot. But it's treasonous because you don't think the same way that this person does, or if this party is in power and you speak out against them, Well, that's the whole basis of our nation being founded on, is the right to dissent against your government.
Yeah. I might not like your free speech, but I'll defend your right to say it.
Yeah. Essentially. So I mean, to be treasonous, which it was back way back in time, you couldn't speak against the king or the monarch or anything like that. Just those thoughts alone were enough to be convicted of treason.
Yeah. And also back then, I think it was a bit more of a tumultuous time, too, because the United States was pretty fresh, and we're worried about possibly England coming back over and basically taking it back during that time. Yeah. So
I think that one of the things that was in the English law that's not in ours was, is also treason for violating the queen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We didn't have that language in ours. Violating the First Lady. Here's where it goes on to explain. It said, under English law, effective during the ratification of the U.S. Constitution, it included the Treason Act of 1351. There was essentially five species of treason. Of the five, the Constitution only adopted two, levying war and adhering to enemies. It omitted three species of treason, which involved encompassing or imagining the death of the king. Just imagining it. Imagining the death of a king, certain types of counterfeiting, and finally, fornication with women in the royal family, because that would call into question the parentage of royal successors. So if you were caught having an affair, and you were a commoner, and you were caught having an affair with someone of royal blood, you were guilty of treason, because you just poisoned the bloodline. If that lady had a kid, they don't know for sure whose it was, and you just spoiled the bloodline.
Wow, that's... I can see why that didn't make the transition over to our Constitution.
I was surprised to read that, though. I couldn't believe that.
Well, if you think about it, you said it came about in 1357.
Well, that was the Treason Act.
Right.
And so that was what was still in effect in England, that their treason was based on.
Yeah.
When we did it in 17...
Think about that. That's about, 400 years later, they still had the same kind of law. That's older than our country.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So... That's pretty strange that it was that long.
You know, I was thinking that the two people having to witness it, wasn't that the same thing as was held up when we did the pig boy episode? And remember they accused that guy because that pig looked like him that was born?
Mm-hmm.
And they said they had to have two people that were witness to it for the crime to have been founded against him?
Yeah, I think I remember that. But the other thing, too, they have is basically for any kind of... signing of a will, you generally have to have two witnesses as well. So the two witness thing pops up quite a bit.
So what they're saying, it's easy to get one guy to lie for you, but to get two guys to lie for you, now that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Because then one lie's got to cover up the other lie.
Yeah. It took place in the Count of Monte Cristo.
It'll be like, what was that Bible passage with Bathsheba? Or was who was it? The one that they said that the... remember they told the lady they were going to say that she was...
unchaste?
Yeah, unchaste, if she didn't sleep with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when she wouldn't go along, then the two men stood up and claimed that they'd each had relations with her. So then they got them separated, and they said, okay, where did you have relations? Where did you have relations? Then they couldn't, you know, they couldn't corroborate each other's stories.
Well, see, that wouldn't have that would not be good under our Constitution either, because the testimony of the two witnesses to the same overt act... So it would have had to have taken place all at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm talking menage a trois.
Hmm. Well, we weren't in France, so you couldn't do that.
Well, now, the crime is actually prohibited by Congress now, treason. But it's codified in the United States Code, 18 U.S.C. 2381. And that states, this is a bit more of a definition as to treason, whoever... owing allegiance to the United States, levies war against them, or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid or comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death, or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under this title, but not less than $10,000, and shall be incapable of holding any office in the United States. And again, that you talked about the two witnesses, that was inherited from the British Treason Act of 1695, going back a ways. So the Constitution kind of defines it to a certain degree, and then the U.S. Code goes out and kind of lays it out a little bit more.
Now, there was a Supreme Court case, Haupt v. United States, that the Supreme Court found the two witnesses are not required to prove intent, nor are two witnesses required to prove that an overt act is treasonable. The two witnesses, according to decision, are required to prove only that the overt act occurred.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense because probably getting those intent type crimes are very hard to prove. So basically, if you're trying to show intent, having two people that can testify to intent is kind of hard because that's usually pretty rare. Seeing somebody actually perform the act is a much more common thing. So that makes perfect sense as to why that would be. Congress does have other laws, though, which are similar to treason. So basically, it doesn't just have to be treason to be kind of be in that same vein of crimes against the government. And I think we're going to get into those. But before that, we have some pending motions today. Some treasonous
Yes, Your
motions.
Honor.
They're not actually treasonous.
We would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
All right. Who do we have on the docket today?
I can tell you what would truly be treasonous, Your Honor, and that is to not go to DollarShaveClub.com to buy your bathroom products. They are the preeminent and most freedom-loving company in supplying bathroom supplies.
Allow us to be two witnesses for Dollar Shave Club.
It is an overt act of cleanliness.
If you ever shower or brush your teeth or try to make your hair look presentable, we've got good news for you. Dollar Shave Club has a lot of stuff to help you out.
Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best and not be convicted of treason.
That's right. They can actually keep you from going to jail for treason. I don't know how, but if you're clean, it can't hurt.
You're clean with a bright, shiny smile and your hair nicely coiffed.
And the important thing is, you can't be treasonous if you use the One Wipe Charlies.
That's right.
They keep your tush clean.
They wipe out the scent of malfeasance.
And treason.
And treason.
So Dollar Shave Club, yes, that Dollar Shave Club, delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it. Shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, and even the aforementioned wipe that leaves your tush feeling tingly clean.
Tingly! I'm a big fan of their Amber and Lavender Calming Body Cleanser. I really am. I'm not just reading that. I really am. I've never smelled anything like it in a good way. Good luck finding a product that great at the store.
And all of Dollar Shave Club's products are made with top-shelf ingredients that won't break your budget. You'll feel the difference. Plus, shipping is included with your membership.
Free shipping?
Free shipping.
You can't beat free.
That's the most American thing we've said today.
There's nothing treasonous about free shipping.
No, sir.
And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products for just $5. You can get their Daily Essential Starter Set. It comes with Body Cleanser, One Wipe Charlies for your butt, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the Six Blade Executive.
And you can keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month. Add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need for the bathroom. Check it all out at DollarShaveClub.com/court.
That's DollarShaveClub.com/court. Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you, and they'll wipe out the treason.
So now, aside from treason, Congress has passed other laws which relate to anything that might undermine the government. There's the Sedition Act, 1798.
A Sedition Act?
Sedition Act.
That sounds salacious.
It is salacious.
It's seditious and salacious?
There's the Espionage and Sedition in the Espionage Act of 1917. These actually do not require testimony of two witnesses, and they're actually much more broadly applied.
That might have been one that brought about from Mata Hari.
Possibly so. Actually, and some of these laws are still in effect in the United States. Well-known spies, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, were convicted of espionage rather than treason. It's just an easier to prove.
Well-known spies. So, you know, spies are not supposed to be well-known. That probably brought about their downfall. Are they advertising on Facebook or something?
I don't know.
Well-known spies. Those two words do not go together. Well-known in spies. You're supposed to be a non-known spy.
What about James Bond?
Well, he's fictitious. Those people were real.
Were they?
Yeah.
I've never seen him.
Well, I've never seen him. Yeah, I never heard of them, so they weren't well-known to me. But I guess they were well-known in their era.
You've never heard of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg?
No, never have.
They were spies.
Yeah, well-known ones, but I've never heard of them. We're walking around in circles here, dude.
I was crazy once. when you think of traitors in U.S. history, who's the first one that pops to your mind?
Benedict Arnold.
That's right. He is considered the basic traitor because he colluded with the British during the Revolutionary War. The interesting thing is that this actually occurred before the Constitution was written. So the Constitution didn't apply to him.
No, but they still had the English law that covered treason.
They did, and he was a general in the British Army, too, at that time. So,
well, he became a general in the British Army after he left us and betrayed us.
He did.
He tried to give away West Point.
He did.
He was in charge of it, and so he made a deal. Of course, he was dating an English collaborator.
Yeah.
And so they think that she helped persuade him to do it. So for a certain amount of money, he decided to give them West Point. The plot was foiled.
She was using Feminine Wiles.
Feminine Wilds?
I thought it was Wiles.
Wiles? She was out for a while.
So how was the plot foiled?
The plot was foiled when some communication letters that were being sent were intercepted, and they read about the plot, and they knew that the jig was up. So then they went to get him, but he ran to the English army, and they took him in and made him a general in their army. And then he fought against us. He turned and fought against us, and he even led a massacre of people. He was born here.
Yeah.
He was born here in America, and he led a massacre against people in a neighboring town to the town he grew up in.
It's like he was born in Springfield, but he attacked Shelbyville.
Well, he was born in Connecticut, and he led a nearby, it wasn't the town he grew up in, but it was a nearby town.
Yeah.
And he led a massacre there where they massacred all the Americans that were there. That's how vile this person was. But you know what he never was?
What's that?
He was never convicted of treason.
That's true. Because I guess he couldn't have been, because we didn't have it.
Well, no, that wasn't why.
Why?
It's because he left with the English army. He fought for them, and then when the war was over, he went back to England.
Oh, you're dang Skippy, he would. He'd be crazy to stay here.
But here's what I thought was funny with the rest of that story. He goes back to England. Nobody in England liked him.
Yeah.
See, he was really an American because he'd been born here. He goes over there, and he was a well-to-do businessman. Nobody wanted to do business with him. So he decided, well, I'll go to Canada. Canadians like everybody.
Right.
So he went to Canada and started running his business. The Canadians didn't even like him.
Oh, if the Canadians have a problem with you, you're in trouble.
Yeah, when the Canadians don't even like you. So he's like, hey, I'm getting out of here, you hosers. And he went back to England and retired into the wilderness, basically, and lived out his life and died.
That's a kind of a sad story.
Well, not really. I'd like to have seen him hung.
He got his comeuppance, though, I guess.
Yeah, and then they named the eggs after him.
Eggs Benedict.
Yeah, I guess that means they turned over or something. I don't know.
I don't know. The past few times I've ordered poached eggs, they haven't been properly cooked. And
I would not eat a poached egg.
Oh, I love poached eggs.
Ugh.
When done properly, that's like eggs 101.
Ugh. Scrambled or fried.
But you said, talking about the messages which got intercepted, it got me thinking. You threw a lot of interceptions in the last family football game.
That's true. I did. That's because I was playing left-handed. My right arm doesn't work. I had no knees and a left hand. That's all I had.
Well, enough about family football games and Benedict Arnold and Eggs Benedict.
Well, now, Benedict Arnold was applicable.
Yeah, he was. Just the eggs weren't. The huevos.
But it was quite exciting to mention it.
Since the Constitution came into effect, we've actually had fewer than 40 federal prosecutions for treason. And actually, there's not all of them have been convictions. And even people that have been convicted, there's been quite a few pardons under the people who've been tried for treason. So, one of the most famous treason trials ever was Alexander Hamilton's friend,
Aaron Burr.
And he, in 1807, he was tried for treason, and he actually was acquitted.
Well, that's because the same thing. It was that levying war phrase is what acquitted him. Because even though he declared himself the president of Mexico, and he talked about gathering an army to go and attack the United States and take over the United States, he never actually did anything. He just talked about it.
Right.
So when it actually came down to it, they said, well, we can't convict him. He didn't levy war.
Well, also, if you think about the conspiracy charges, a lot of times you have to take a step, an act in furtherance of it as well. So maybe that was part of the reason, too, is that, you know, he didn't really take any steps towards it.
He declared himself president of Mexico.
But he really didn't do anything about it.
No. There's a bunch of drug cartels down there declaring themselves the president of Mexico now.
Are they?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Is that in the news?
Well, they run the show down there.
Well, I know they run the show. I just didn't know they were actually...
Well, I'm just saying that sarcastically, that they run the show. The president has very little that he can do to stop them.
You know, like when it's like you're talking about a well-known spy, it's like a well-known drug cartel kingpin.
Yeah.
They don't last too long.
No. Once you're well-known, then you're not around long.
Exactly. You gotta keep that.
I notice when you get to disliking people, they ain't around long neither.
Yeah, so we had Aaron Burr. That was like one of the first major ones. And then we had the American Civil War, which popped up. And we had a lot of different treason trials and things went on during that time, as you might be able to imagine.
Yeah, because everybody that fought for the other side, everybody that fought for the South, was guilty of treason.
Exactly.
Then they levied war.
They did levy war.
But they didn't really find a lot of them guilty of treason.
They didn't. They did some, but not all of them. One of the most famous ones was Jefferson Davis, who was the Confederate president. He was actually indicted and held in prison for 2 years, but then the indictment was dropped in 1869 because basically, I guess, the political scene had kind of changed a little bit, and they thought he might actually be acquitted of it. So rather than try and lose, they just said, you know what, we're just going to drop it. Probably under the auspices of, like, let's heal all these old wounds. So,
well, that was what Lincoln's idea was before he was assassinated, is he didn't want to punish the South for what they'd done. He wanted to try to rebuild the South.
Yeah. Well, and actually, in part of the surrender, the story goes that when Lee surrendered to Ulysses S. Grant, he assured all the Confederate soldiers and officers that there would be blanket amnesty, that they could return to their homes, and as long as they refrained from any further hostility and things like that they would be fine. There was one instance where that actually didn't take place. There was a cavalry guy named Red Legs.
Oh yeah. And he gunned down all the Southerners when they rounded them up, the last of their rebel rabble.
That's right. And they even took their rifles they'd be needing for varmints and
squirrel hunting and sitch.
And sitch.
We do a lot of Josie Wales quoting, because that's the best movie that was ever made. Sorry if you disagree with that, but Outlaw Josie Wales, the best movie ever made, hands down. No exceptions.
So that was the first of the blanket amnesties. But then basically all Confederate officials received a blanket amnesty issued by President Andrew Johnson when he left office in 1869. So that was kind of like the last act. And by 1869, things had probably died down a little bit as far as that. So, you know, it was kind of the final peacekeeping part there, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just talking.
Just supposing
and such.
Supposing and such.
Now, the next great tumultuous time in our history with regards to treason was World War II.
Yes.
We had a couple of kind of famous people who were convicted of treason during World War II. Mm-hmm. Possibly the most famous that, even if you don't know the whole story of it, you definitely heard the name probably, is... I'm going to butcher this name, but in 1949, it was Iva Tagore d'Aquino. She was convicted of treason for her wartime radio broadcast under the name of Tokyo Rose.
I remember seeing that in all the old war movies.
Yeah.
And there would be Tokyo Rose talking to all the American soldiers about giving up and all this kind of stuff.
Laying down your gun. Yeah. You can't win.
Yeah.
So she was sentenced to 10 years. She served 6. And I guess evidently there were some prosecution witnesses who supposedly lied under oath, and she was actually pardoned in 1977.
By then-President Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford.
Yep. What I thought was funny is I found 9 people that were actually convicted of treason, if you don't take into account the Civil War things.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 of those 9 people were from West Virginia.
I noticed that too.
One third of the people in U.S. history that have been convicted of treason, and 3 of them are from West Virginia.
We're an unruly bunch around these here parts.
Well, they say we're overly represented in the military, so we're evidently overly represented in treason as well.
Yeah, well, people like to fight around these here parts.
But one of them is a famous one that I think, I don't know if you have anything on or not.
What's that?
John Brown.
Yeah, John Brown. He was the one who led a raid on Harper's Ferry. He was an abolitionist, and he basically wanted to start essentially a slave revolt, and he raided Harper's Ferry. This was actually before West Virginia existed. Mm-hmm.
But 4 years before.
Yeah, 4 years before. Harper's Ferry was is now part of West Virginia, though. So it's actually part of our West Virginia history lore that we learned about in school.
And there was a federal armory there.
There was a federal armory. And he basically got a small little army together. And they trained and got ready for this. And it wasn't so much in secret, though, because I read one account that basically they assumed about 90 people knew about this raid before it even took place. So he wasn't very secretive about it. He was actually trying to get different famous leaders to side with him to do it. And not many did. And he was not well received amongst the other abolitionists. He was a bit too crazy, maybe. I don't know.
Well, have you ever seen a picture of the dude?
I have. He looks very crazy.
He looked way crazy. Bat crap crazy.
Yeah, he has a more wildly beard than me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. Talk about a dude that's been living up in the hills too long.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing about it, I remember as a kid, when you don't really understand everything you're hearing, and they talked about the raid on Harper's Ferry and all this stuff, and when you hear it, you think, well, this was a bad guy. And
yeah.
He was raiding the federal armory and everything. But when you think about it, he was leading a revolt against slavery.
Yeah.
That's what he was trying to do. So I think that he had good intentions. I just think he went about it the wrong way.
What does they say? The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
the road to Harper's Ferry is, too,
exactly.
I guess.
I don't know.
But he had one other guy that was with him. I'd never heard this one before, but it was Aaron Dwight Stevens that was in on the raid, too. And he was also convicted of treason and executed, as well as John Brown, after their failed raid on the armory.
Yeah, John Brown, that's probably interesting. We could probably almost go do a whole podcast on that, but it's not really a legal type thing. It's just kind of an interesting story about the whole comings and goings of that raid.
Yeah.
Some very weird things that took place. But yeah, he was actually convicted of treason against the Commonwealth of Virginia, and in 1859 was executed for attempting to organize armed resistance to slavery.
Well, then in another one, there's a guy named Walter Allen that was convicted of treason in 1922 for taking part in the 1921 Miners' March with the coal companies and the U.S. Army on Blair Mountain, West Virginia.
Yeah.
And, of course, I've been there in my railroad travels.
Yeah.
And Blair Mountain, that was when the Union went to war basically with the Army because they were trying to break up the unions down there.
Yeah, that's a very storied time in West Virginia history. The Battle of Blair Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of interesting things about that, too. That's another one where we could kind of go on and do a podcast about it. Yeah. That might actually have some legal ramifications, too, though, because there were some people that were shot and killed and assassinated and, I think, trials. And,
oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people were.
So,
but he ended up being sentenced to 10 years and had to pay a fine, but he was not executed.
Well, you know why? Part of the reason was because when he appealed it to the Supreme Court and he was out on bail, he just disappeared.
Well, that's pretty good.
So that's part of the reason why he didn't really... Well, I don't think they were probably going to execute him, but still, he just kind of got the heck out of Dodge, so to speak.
Well, he maybe made a wise decision.
There was another person who was actually tried at the same time was United Mine Workers of America leader William Blizzard, mm-hmm. and he was actually acquitted of the charge on May 25th, 1922. So that was a few months before... This other guy was convicted, so...
Well, I think they would have had a hard time determining what was levying war and what was protecting what you thought was yours. You know, it just depends on who said what. So, and this guy was one of the United Mine Workers leaders, so he was kind of forced to the forefront, you know? There were probably a whole lot of other ones there, and you say, now, wait a minute, how can you grab him, and what about the other ones that were there with him?
Yeah, you were standing in the front.
Yeah. You can't pick them, can't get them all. Just get a few up there in the front. The rest of us will be okay.
We're going to all time.
Those guys up front looking around.
We went for an all time high of Jersey Whale quotes. Outlaw Jersey Whale's quotes this episode. There's another guy named during the Civil War, William Bruce Mumford. He was actually not from West Virginia.
No,
he was a North Carolina native and resident.
He was the leader of Mumford and Sons.
I've seen him in concert. I don't think he was. And he was actually hanged for tearing down a U.S. flag during the Civil War.
Well, by God, if that isn't worth doing it, then nothing is.
Yeah, I mean, I would go through this list and see what everybody else did, and that guy seems pretty benign.
Yeah, of all the ones that should have been acquitted, that maybe was the least lethal of them all.
Yeah.
And,
so,
and then there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people that had happened during World War II.
Yeah.
besides Tokyo Rose, you had another lady that was known as Axis Sally.
Yeah.
And she would give the same type of thing, propaganda like Tokyo Rose. You had a Tomio Kawakita, and he was sentenced to death for treason in 1952, but eventually was released by John F. Kennedy and deported to Japan. It was the same type thing.
Get out of the country.
Robert Henry Best. Now, this guy, he was born in South Carolina, and he went and basically he fell in love with somebody while he was studying in Vienna. And so then the war broke out, and he stayed over there and volunteered to broadcast for the German government. And so he did by shortwave radio, but he just kind of wanted to be there and didn't want the Germans to mess with him. So he volunteered to do that. So then after the war was over, the people that moved in there, they turned him over to the U.S. And he was charged and convicted of treason and died in prison in 1952. But he was known for being very clever, and he coined such phrases as the United States of America. That's clever.
Yeah.
Took a lot of work.
I'm sure he wrote a lot more clever things. I was serving out the rest of that sentence in prison.
Martin James Monty was the other one.
This one's the interesting one. I didn't know about this guy.
Yeah. Did you read about him?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, go ahead. Oh.
Didn't read that much about him.
Oh. Okay. I didn't want to do all the talking. I was going to give you a chance. Well, this guy, he was a Navy pilot. And for whatever reason, he'd become disgruntled with the U.S. and the way they did things. So
I heard it was because they didn't serve enough tartar sauce with the fish sticks during lunch.
Well, it could be. But he noticed that an F-5E Lightning aircraft, a photographic reconnaissance version of the P-38, needed work and required a test flight after repairs. He stole the aircraft, not Kraftwerk, and flew to Milan, Italy on the 13th of October, 1944. He then landed and surrendered the plane to German forces. Monty was originally treated as an ordinary prisoner of war until he was able to convince his captors that he had defected out of genuine conviction. His aircraft was handed over to the Luftwaffe, where they tested all Allied aircraft that were captured in flying condition. So then in late 1944, Monty made a microphone test at the recording studio of a propaganda unit, and he did it with that Mildred Gillers, the Axis Sally.
Mm-hmm.
Axis Sally didn't like him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she couldn't stand him. So they kicked him off of that. Monty's lack of ability as a radio commentator ensured that he made only a few broadcasts. So he only did a few broadcasts, and he was terrible at it.
He should have been a podcaster. You can just keep podcasting forever.
Yeah, just 30 minutes of drivel. Nobody cares. So anyway, he ended up being a prisoner of war and was turned over at the end of the war. And so then they had the court-martial trial. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison. However, his sentence was later suspended, and he was allowed, this is what I don't understand, he was allowed to re-enlist in the Army Air Force as a private on February 11th, 1947. He was a sergeant when he was honorably discharged January 26, 1948. Minutes after that, the FBI arrested him in New York and charged him with treason. So then it went through, and then he ended up being sentenced to 25 years in prison and ordered to pay a fine of $10,000. So he served his sentence in Leavenworth in Kansas.
Yeah.
And in 1951, he tried without success to withdraw his guilty plea, insisting he had no treasonable intent when he flew into enemy territory and claiming that he had been pressured by his attorneys into pleading guilty. He was paroled in 1960 and lived in relative obscurity until his death in 2000.
Wow.
So he was around until 2000. If we'd been podcasting sooner, we might have been able to get the guy on our show. It'd been an interesting story.
Yeah. So what were you thinking, Monty?
Well, I thought they'd like to see this plane.
I mean, I know the P-38 was one of the coolest planes ever, but did you really just want to show the Germans that? I think probably the reason why they did the whole rigmarole with regards to giving him an honorable discharge and busting him down to private and all that was probably so they could actually try him of treason. I bet there was some backdoor dealing going on between the civilian prosecuting attorney and the JAG officers or whoever back then, whatever they were called to do this.
Yeah, there might have been some things that they did wrong initially, so they had to re-enlist him so they could turn around and charge him.
Or they were scared he might actually have some sort of legitimate defense that, hey, I was actually just flying a mission. I didn't mean to actually you know, park it there. They treated me as a prisoner of war.
I didn't know there was a no parking zone.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that also may be hard. Like, if he didn't disclose his plans to anybody else, he was going to go do that.
Yeah.
Then how would they actually show that he did it on purpose? Maybe he was just out taking the plane for a joyride and ended up, you know, in the wrong place. So, mm-hmm. I could see where maybe that was just the fix was in, so they say.
Yeah. I mean, if he had, what's his name that defended OJ, there's no telling what kind of story they might have concocted.
Johnny Cochran?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, I mean, that I'm not really kind of making a political statement here, but if you look through our actual history of treason and the historical use of it, people who've previously been convicted and even not convicted, but just tried of treason, there seems to be kind of a precedent for not really trying people outside a time of a declared war where you actually have some sort of military involvement in it as far as the actual crime of treason itself.
Yeah, and even that doesn't seem to quite fit it either. I mean, at the breakout of the Gulf War that started after the bombings in 9/11, mm-hmm. You had John Walker that was the American Taliban.
Yeah.
You remember that? Mm-hmm. And he was captured, and he'd been fighting over there since before 9/11 happened. He'd been over there joining the Taliban and fought with them, and he actually fought against American soldiers, and yet he wasn't even tried for treason.
Yeah.
They said, proving whether that constituted levying war is another story. Walker joined the Taliban in March before anyone had any idea that the sides would be at war. He had to argue that to desert after September 11th would have guaranteed his death. So he's saying he didn't have any choice. He couldn't leave the Taliban. They weren't fighting with America when he joined. And then they were fighting afterwards. And if he left, they were going to kill him. So he didn't have any choice.
Yeah, and there's other Americans who have fought with for Osama bin Laden and jihad and things like that, and they haven't been tried of that for treason either. So, I mean, you can be pretty much bold in the face of fighting against the U.S. almost and not be tried of treason for the most part.
Yeah, they said you're more likely to be charged with a lesser charge, like say that he had been engaged in combat and killed an American soldier. He could be charged with murder,
right,
or something, because we weren't technically at war with the Taliban.
Yeah.
You know, war had never been declared.
So whenever I get back to my political type thing, I was saying, I see people talking about throwing out the definition of treason and what it is, and then talking about how it applies to, say, like President Trump or something like that. You know, I just don't really see the historical context where that would actually apply to him or whatever he's done, in my estimation.
Yeah.
I'm not condoning what he did or anything along those lines, but I just don't think you can't really say it's like this applies to it.
Well, and that's what I mean. It may be something you don't like, but where do you draw the line with the First Amendment?
Yeah.
People saying things you don't like, is that actually levying war, you know?
Yeah. And just if you just look at these things, they basically seem to be there are actual wars going on where people are fighting, and it's pretty much a declared war type situation whenever you see these.
I thought it was interesting that they said that the word traitor, it said Judas Iscariot, who betrayed Jesus, suffers the worst torments of all, being constantly gnawed at by one of Lucifer's own three masks. This is according to Dante.
Mm-hmm.
His treachery is considered so notorious that his name has long been synonymous with traitor, a fate he shares with Benedict Arnold and Marcus Junius Brutus.
Oh.
Et tu, Brute.
Yeah.
Indeed, the etymology of the word traitor originates from Judas's handing over of Jesus to the chief priests, captains of the temple, and elders. The word is derived from the Latin traditor, which means one who delivers. In Christian theology and political thinking until after the Enlightenment, considered treason and blasphemy as synonymous, as it challenged both the state and the will of God. Kings were considered chosen by God, and to betray one's country was to do the work of Satan.
That's interesting, the etymology of that. That means one who delivers,
yeah.
Traitor. I know the Italian traitori or something like that means like kitchen. So I wonder if that means one who delivers food.
A traitor traitori? I don't know. That's a slippery slope. It could be. You never know.
Speaking of which, I'm getting hungry.
Who delivers? You know, there was one other guy that was left off the list. Of course, I was surprised. First of all, we discussed Benedict Arnold, that he wasn't on the list.
Yeah. That's
because he never was tried for treason.
That's right.
There was another one. I don't know if you remember. This was an old movie.
Outlaw Josie Wales.
Well, no, not that one. That is an old movie too. But it was like The Execution of Private Eddie Slovak.
The name sounds familiar, but I can't.
Well, I thought that he had been one that was convicted of treason, but he actually had been convicted of desertion.
Oh, okay.
And he was the only American soldier executed for desertion. So that's what that story was about. But it was, he'd actually grown up and he was a small town hood and everything, but then the draft came, he got drafted, had to go into war, and he got there, he ended up on the front lines, and he was scared to death.
Yeah.
So he decided that it was better to be a deserter and what he thought, go to jail, rather than have to stay up there and risk your life. So he just went back, wrote out a thing and said, I'm deserting, and handed it to a superior officer and said, you know, I'm deserting, I'm not going back to the front line. And he said, look, son, tear that up right now. Go on back with your group. We won't say anything about this. He said, no, I want to desert. So another guy, they got another bigger officer came in, went through the same routine. No, I want to desert. So this guy said, okay, right on the back here on this, that you've been advised to do this and you're refusing to do it and you are a deserter. He wrote it on there for him, handed it to him. So even then, when they brought him in and had him in a trial, they said, look, just say you made a mistake, go back and join your regiment, and we'll see everything go. No way. I want to be a deserter. And in his mind, he's still thinking, they're not going to do anything to me but put me in jail. And I've been in jail. It's not that bad.
Right.
So all the way up until he got the death sentence, this guy argued for his right to be a deserter. So then they said, okay, that's fine. You're a deserter. Go over there and stand by that wall. We're going to shoot you. And they did.
Even the guy pulling the trigger, you sure you want to do this? Yep.
Yeah. They kept asking him. And
I've had a few clients where I've had to have them sign things that I've basically advised them of something. They want to do something contrary to what I'm advising them. And usually it's if it's a pretty serious situation where it's like, hey, you don't want to do this. And they're like, yeah, I do. I'm like, no, you really don't want to do this. Yeah, I do. Okay, well, if you want to go ahead with this course of action, I'm going to have you sign a piece of paper that I advise you to do the opposite. If your lawyer ever does that to you, you might really want to listen to what they have to say.
If they're having you sign some. But he told the group when they were marching him over to execute him, he said, they're not shooting me for deserting the United States Army. Thousands of guys have done that. They just need me to make an example out of somebody. And I'm it because I'm an ex-con. I used to steal things when I was a kid, and that's what they're shooting me for. They're shooting me for the bread and chewing gum I stole when I was 12 years old.
No, they're shooting you because you were an idiot.
So the priest came over and said, Eddie, when you get up there, say a little prayer for me. Slovak answered, okay, Father, I'll pray that you don't follow me too soon.
The guy could have saved himself all the way up to the very end.
Oh, yeah, they were trying. They were doing everything they could because they did have thousands of deserters. There was a German offensive taking place in France at the time, and they had people leaving by the droves.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they did want to execute all those people. But at the same time, this guy was so bold about it, no, I'm leaving, that they had to make an example out of somebody. And basically, that's what they decided to do, is make an example out of him.
Yeah. They did, but at the same time, he was trying to make an example out of them.
Yes.
To a certain degree, too.
I think also, I just don't think the guy was too swift.
No. If he was saying that I'm being tried, or I was being shot for stealing bread when I was a kid,
yeah.
No, I don't think he's not really following what's going down here.
But I'd remembered that in my mind, that story is about him committing treason.
Yeah.
But it was about him deserting.
Yeah. So I think treason as a term of art gets thrown out there quite a bit, but it's actually a little bit different than what you might think as a layperson, or even I really thought about until I started researching this. I didn't know what treason was. I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing. Like, what is treason?
Well, and not only that, when you think about with the discussion that's going on right now, it gets right back to the whole root of them defining treason and what was going on then.
Yeah.
You know, over 200 years ago.
Yeah. You know, we don't need political parties throwing out this whole treason thing back and forth.
If you don't agree with me, it's treason.
Yeah.
Because I'm right and you're wrong. Well, everybody thinks that.
It's no fun being a moderate, though.
Well, it can be. Why can't we all just get along?
I don't know. Well, that's going to bring about
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms we talked about. said talked about twice. Anyway, so
I'll edit one of them out.
Thanks. you always take care of me with that editing. I know.
I try to clean it up there, counselor.
Clean it up.
I couldn't do that if I was a court reporter. I'd have to put down exactly what you said.
So I walk up to the court reporter before you start and slide him a 20 and say, keep it clean.
That's why you saw the cartoon somebody posted on the Facebook page. I mean, we've had that on there before.
What's that?
The Morty cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Where they did of that transcript. Yeah. That wasn't the actual audio from the trial.
No, that was Rick and Morty doing it.
Yeah, that was Rick and Morty doing it, and the cartoon added to it. But it is, when you think about that thing, it's just absolutely ridiculous that actually happened. How does that happen? How does that judge had to have quit after that or been removed? I mean, he was just as negligent in that as an idiot that was in front of him.
Well, the first question I have for you is, where is treason defined?
Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution.
Bang. Look at you. And that's where it's actually defined in kind of broad strokes. And it doesn't really give a penalty or anything like that, but that's where it's first set out and it kind of limits what treason is, and it goes away from the whole English.
And it limits what the penalty can be.
Well, no, it doesn't limit what the penalty can be in the Constitution.
Oh, well, what about that power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture?
Well, I guess that does kind of limit that. I mean, I was thinking more
of like... You can't taint the rest of the family.
Exactly. So it does limit that, yes, you're right. But I was thinking the actual sentence itself.
Exactly. Yeah, it doesn't define what the sentence, so right. it can be up to death because it doesn't say it can't be.
Right. But it is laid out in the U.S. Code, 18 U.S.C. 2381. And do you know what the fine is for treason under 18 U.S.C. 2381?
$10,000.
Not less than $10,000. And is guilty of treason shall suffer death or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under the title. And incapable of holding any office in the United States.
That should go without saying, don't you think? You can't hold office anymore if you've committed treason?
That seems like a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a guy right now that if he had committed treason and that wasn't the law, he could probably get elected.
It's probably true. The next question I have for you, what is attainder or corruption of blood?
That means that your family is punished for your misdeeds as well, that they take your inheritance, they take all your property, and your family is also shamed.
Now, the difference is between the U.S. and England, whenever they, probably England doesn't have that law anymore, I don't know, but the difference was is that in the U.S., that it ended at the end of your life, basically.
Right.
So the whole stripping of all
that. They could take your stuff while you were alive.
That's right.
Once you died, they had to give your stuff back.
Exactly. They couldn't punish your family and things like that. So.
Right.
Whereas in England, under the common law, it was gone.
It was it.
That's right.
You didn't exist.
Now, we've talked about how there are different kinds of crimes against the United States, which are not treason. And they have some very interesting names. You remember what those were?
High crimes and misdemeanors. No.
No.
I'm referring to my notes. I don't think I have that.
That's not... Those aren't notes. That's actually just a script for the Outlaw Josie Wales.
I don't need a script. I know all of it. I've watched it enough.
I'm talking about...
I was thinking of desertion. Oh, espionage.
Espionage is one, yeah.
Espionage and... what was the other one? It was like that. It was like being a spy or something like that. Espionage.
Sedition.
Oh, yeah. Sedition and salacious or something.
Yeah, well, not really
salacious. I added salacious.
Yeah, it's good. It's good for the story.
Yeah.
Spices it up a little bit.
Yeah, Sedition Act did this.
Sedition and espionage. Those are just some different things people have been tried under, which are kind of similar to treason, but not the same. And also desertion, like you said.
Well, I think of some of those things as being more for people that are actually from other countries that came here and spied on us. Or, I mean, like, didn't they talk about Snowden convicting him of treason because he gave secrets, government secrets away to the Russians or whatever?
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't charged with treason.
No. Well, he's not here. I guess you could still charge him whether he was here or not.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, if he ever came back, he might get charged. Yeah. But would that be considered levying war in the strict sense of the term? No, I don't think you could say that.
Yeah.
Is it aiding and abetting the enemy? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to prove that. for the most part. So I mean,
with the strict confines as defined by the Constitution, which you're not going to have too many people elaborate on the Constitution.
No. Now, as far as like espionage or sedition, things like that.
There you go.
100%. I think those are the kinds of things you can say. But when you say somebody's guilty of treason, I think you're kind of, it's a bit of a misnomer.
Could you see that? Somebody saying, we find him guilty of sedition. And they say, what? What did I do?
Treason. But just light treason.
But it has a better name. Nobody understands it. It's sedition. Sounds like it has something to do with...
sleeping?
Yeah. Sedation. Oh, that was Bill Cosby's crime.
Oh, God. I think we're done.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.